Hello, this is the Overtones Podcast, a show about the beauty of diversity within Christianity today. I'm Joe, and I'm a church worker.
I'm Christy, and I'm a church historian.
And I'm Lorraine, and I'm a Christian teacher. On our show, we talk to academics, professionals, and full-time church workers to explore lesser-heard voices that are shaping the church today.
Listen with us, and this season we'll explore how Puritans coped with same-sex attraction in 17th century America, how Taiwanese evangelical preaching addressed the presidential election in 2024, the unique challenges to evangelism facing Korean city churches, the changing perception and pastoral support for single women in the UK, and more.
Christy, and I grew up in Taiwan. It's that time of the year when we celebrate Lunar New Year. Growing up, I heard stories about Lunar New Year, legends about a beast called Nian in Chinese, which means year, and how this monster, Nian, goes out to eat people on New Year's Day. People go out and stick red papers on their doorframes to scare the beast away, hence the spring couplets we have during Lunar New Year today. I found one person who is most suitable for us to find out more about how Taiwanese in the older generation celebrated Lunar New Year and how Christians in Taiwan did it differently. My grandpa, Guo Jiachuan, is now 92 years old, and he has been setting up and pastoring churches in both southern and northern Taiwan since he was in his 20s. That would have been back in the 1950s. I have a short recording of me interviewing my grandpa. Would you guys like to hear it?
Yes, please.
Could you please tell us what Lunar New Year is? Lunar New Year is a festival that we Chinese have long been celebrating, a custom that we observe. Everything has a start, and there's a start of the year as well. And Lunar New Year means the beginning of a year, New Year. So how do people celebrate Lunar New Year in Taiwan then? Okay, first of all, kids are the happiest. Back in the day, in rural Taiwan, you don't get fish, meat, sometimes not even white rice. But you got all these at Lunar New Year, fish, meat, white rice. You're also getting new clothes, new shoes. So everybody was over the moon. But there were side effects as well, because people didn't usually eat so well and so much. So they couldn't digest well. So then you had people getting stomachache, rushing to the toilet. You heard about this all the time.
Okay.
So why do people eat so much and buy so much new stuff during Lunar New Year? There's a saying in Hokkien called Sulang Um Su Ding, which means whatever others have, we must have them as well. So Lunar New Year is a time when people would think, oh, although we're not as well off as others, we're still letting our kids get stuff. We still need to come up with things to have. So people do make preparations for Lunar New Year. Does buying new things mean something? Like, does it symbolize something? Yeah, even though people might not have money to buy new things, but during Lunar New Year, they will still buy them, force themselves to purchase new clothes. It's a celebration of a new beginning, so we got New Year, we'll buy new clothes, buy new shoes, and be happy. So it does symbolize a new beginning. Are there other traditions during Lunar New Year? Things people do in Taiwan in order to celebrate the New Year? Some people oppose Lunar New Year precisely because of the customs or traditions that are tied up with Lunar New Year, especially a Christian group called Zhuhui So or local churches. By the way, it was originally a movement that was heavily influenced by the Plymouth Brethren. So one of them, once visited Zhongxiao bookstore. But because of Lunar New Year, the bookstore was closed. This person got really angry and shouted outside the bookstore, "Why are we celebrating Lunar New Year? The year which is Nian in Chinese is the beast. It's an idol. So Christians shouldn't celebrate Lunar New Year." But even so, because there's always a new year, there's always a new beginning. So to a lot of people, most Christians do still celebrate it without seeing Nian, which is year, as a beast or as the devil. So as you mentioned just now, some Christians, such as some members of the group called local churches, were opposed to Lunar New Year celebrations because of the legend that speaks of the story of a beast, which they see as a religious story that is not Christian. But there are also some other Christians who do celebrate Lunar New Year because to them, it's simply a celebration of the beginning of a new year. So, Grandpa, based on your many years of church ministry as a pastor, what are the differences between the way Christians celebrate Lunar New Year and the way non-Christians celebrate Lunar New Year in Taiwan? During Lunar New Year, very often pastors like me feel the need to remind our congregants not to go gambling. People usually get more money to spare during Lunar New Year, and also they are usually off work because Lunar New Year is a national holiday. So then you have people idling, gathering, and they will gather to gamble. Gambling is a bad habit, so in this season, Christians at church will often caution others against gambling or to be reminded not to gamble themselves. So very often, churches will also hold a Thanksgiving service on New Year's Day in church to give thanks to God for the past year and ask God for his protection and guidance in the coming year. And also again, pray to God that he will help us not to fall into temptations such as gambling or engaging other types of sins. I've never heard of this before. So final question, Grandpa. When Christians start to celebrate Lunar New Year, are there times when we Christianize traditional stories or legends related to the New Year? So in Exodus, when the Israelites are about to leave Egypt, each family is to kill a lamb and put the blood on the door frames. Seeing the blood of the lamb, the Lord will pass over the household. Hence the name of the festival, the Passover. So today, when we put chunlian, spring couplets, using red papers on the door frames, it is like the blood of the lamb, which is where the red papers in Lunar New Year come from. What do you think of this theory, Grandpa? The Passover and the spring couplets? It is very much the truth. So we talk about it all the time at church. We don't know the historical formation of the custom of sticking red papers, spring couplets to the doors, but very likely it was the Passover and beliefs in the Passover that had spread to China. So during Lunar New Year, we prepare spring couplets. So you do think it is possible that our customs like spring couplets are influenced by the Passover, which somehow shape our legends about Lunar New Year? Yep. Okay, Grandpa, it is almost Lunar New Year. Would you like to say something to our audience? Lunar New Year is a new beginning, but let us not simply be enthusiastic about making New Year's resolutions. I'm going to read the Bible every day, and after 3 days you give up. Oh, it's New Year, and I want to pray every day for this long. But then, after a week, you give up. So, whatever you promise yourself to do, do it, and build up good habits. Read your Bible every day, pray every day, and keep going. Thank you, Grandpa. Would you like to wish our listeners Happy New Year? Happy New Year. Thank you, Grandpa.
Well, welcome to our episode on Lunar New Year. We're going to have a discussion about how Christians should respond to celebrations like this, and others too. So join us.
Joe and Christy, you both grew up celebrating Lunar New Year. I did not. Could you start us off by just telling us a bit about what that looked like for each of you in your families?
For me, I grew up in the UK and my parents are both South Korean. So Lunar New Year, yeah, we in a way celebrated it by, you know, we recognized it. We called extended family who lived back in Korea, who were celebrating it. We'd have this broth called, I don't know how to translate it exactly, but it's basically rice cake and dumplings and beef and things like that in a broth. Really tasty.
Sounds delicious.
Apparently makes you a year older as well. But we'd have that. If we were bothered, we would kind of do this whole like bowing ritual to our parents to show respect and get that kind of red packet of money. We'd tell each other, well, I wish you the best of luck for this new year. But as I grew up, as time progressed, I think we probably celebrated it not too much. So Christy, yeah, what about you? You grew up not in the UK.
There are like striking similarities. I grew up in Taiwan and we very often see this as Chinese New Year. But who knows, Koreans want to copy us as well, apparently. And we also have like red packets. And I heard that in different countries, they have different or different rules when it comes to red packets. In Taiwan, the older people will give red packets to younger people. But when you start working, then you stop receiving them. Whereas if you still work, even if you're an adult, then technically, if you're not too old, I guess, then your parents and your aunts and aunties and uncles will still give you red packets. And I've heard that because I live in Singapore for a while and apparently it's different there. So red packets, and I think the bowing thing is probably, I assume it's a little bit more strictly observed in Korea.
Yeah.
Because my dad is half Korean, half Chinese. So my dad grew up in Korea and he will always be like, oh, it's so different in Taiwan. Like if you were in Korea, then you'll be forced to bow. And I remember growing up thinking, well, we're not in Korea, are we?
Yeah.
And I think we do have food that we eat, the specific dishes that are associated with Lunar New Year. And I think in different parts of China, although Taiwan, we very often think that we are not part of China. But in terms of cuisine, there's a very strong association with Chinese dishes. And we are very often considered on kind of the southern part. In that sense, we eat certain dishes that people in southern China also eat during Lunar New Year. Whereas in kind of northern China and other parts of the world, probably they eat different food.
Sure.
I think in Taiwan, so then it depends on where your ancestors are from, that could also make a difference. But very often you have fish, because fish in Chinese is called yu, which very often pond, as the pun goes, it suggests that you will always have more. So yu is like you have something left. So when you eat fish, it's, the idea is that in the coming year, you will have more than you need. So people
nice.
Eat fish.
I see.
And very often people also eat dumplings, but not in my household. Very often in Chinese New Year, things are kind of associated with money and prosperity. So I remember there's this tradition when people would put a coin or like some money inside of a piece of dumpling. And when we all eat dumpling, the idea is that one person is going to get, they're going to eat that dumpling and they will discover the coin and they'll be like, oh, congrats, because you're going to get rich. So there's a lot of, I don't know why people are obsessed with getting rich during Lunar New Year.
What happens if you swallow the coin? Surely people swallow it or you break a tooth. I don't think that's very much good luck.
That's a very good point. I don't think, yeah, surely there's news about it.
There must be, yeah.
I don't know.
So Christy, we heard a little bit of your family's reflections on Lunar New Year and Christian's response to this kind of cultural festival at the start of the episode. I wonder, Joe, was that ever kind of a question in your family growing up with Christian parents as well?
For me, I guess not so much. I think we tended to celebrate it as and use the time as family time.
Sure.
But my parents, although they did take me to church, I don't think their faith extended much further than that. But like now looking back, I think there are so many opportunities to use that time to remind us of the hope that we have in Jesus. Similarly, with other kind of celebrations, I'm sure Halloween in the US presents lots of opportunities of, well, how do we kind of deal with this? How do we engage with it? Do we just withdraw? Lots of questions like that. But for me, looking back, not so much. Now, I think I would engage with it a lot more, kind of celebrating it as a good gift from God, but also engaging with it in a distinctive way.
Sure. It's really interesting you bring up Halloween. I was thinking of this as well. And having lived in the US and the UK, to paint in very broad brushstrokes, I think I've noticed a difference in how American churches interact with Halloween versus how British, at least conservative British churches, tend to interact. It seems there's more resistance to Halloween in the British context and wanting to very much distance the church from it. I mean, resistance and offering alternatives, like Reformation Day or light parties, that sort of thing, which is great. Whereas American Christians, in my experience, generally are a little bit happier to see Halloween as a family holiday. Again, offer some alternatives like trunk or treat, where all the Christian families bring their cars to the church parking lot and have a bunch of candy in the back of the car that they hand out to the trick-or-treaters. Happy to dress up, that sort of thing. So it's very interesting you have these two different, probably both very legitimate responses, but how that plays out in the different contexts is really interesting to see.
That is very true. And I think that goes with a lot of different traditions and cultures.
Yes.
When it comes to Christianity entering a local culture, and I think followers of Christ then will reflect on their own culture and think, how do I, as a Christian now with a new identity, interact with the things that I used to do that seem to be tied up with religions or traditions that are in some way to an extent religious?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's exactly what Paul talks about in the book of Colossians, right? With these kind of human traditions. You've been set free is what he says. He says, don't let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink or with regard to a religious festival. And so, yeah, in Christ with that new identity, how are we supposed to live as one who's been made alive in Christ? And that looks like, looks like being a Christian. It looks like setting your minds on things above. It looks like fixing your eyes on Jesus.
Absolutely. And there's a very personal element to it as well, isn't there? I was just reading about Diwali and different Christians' experiences and perceptions of how one should interact with Diwali. And what I noticed in these different interviews was some people saying, you know, well, I grew up a very devout Buddhist or Hindu, and Diwali was a huge part of my life before becoming a Christian. And it was a really difficult thing to let go of and not celebrate when I became a Christian, but it was really important for me to do that. And I think kind of our background does make a lot of difference as well in terms of how we can interact with these cultural festivals. Because for someone who maybe was raised a Christian and never celebrated Diwali in any sort of religious sense, but just celebrated the lights or, you know, enjoyed the food, that sort of thing, it might not mean as much. And to throw in another Bible verse, I think it kind of connects with the situation in 1 Corinthians, right? Where you have the weak and the strong that Paul talks about, which may just be labels that the Corinthians have actually given each other, that some people find it a much more personal conscience issue that they have to tread much more delicately around, whereas others, they don't personally feel affected as much and can be a bit insensitive in that sense. So I think that's another element that we have to consider.
Yeah, I think you're right. In terms of the kind of biblical language of weak versus strong, it's also, it can be very circumstantial. Like in one culture, celebrating Lunar New Year can be considered something that strong Christians empathize with.
Right.
Whereas in another culture, it can be considered what strong Christians do because their conscience are not as bothered.
Right.
So from a different perspective, it's different. And I wonder whether it comes down to our sense of what our communal culture is like and how do we respond lovingly and charitably. When you mentioned Diwali, that reminds me, when I was in Singapore, it just so happened that they had a huge Diwali celebration and it was absolutely beautiful. I remember I was cycling with a bunch of friends from Oxford, and they're all Singaporeans. So we had this kind of like a Christy, welcome to Singapore, and we were cycling around the Marina Bay. And we went through a couple of communities, like local neighborhood, and all the Hindu Singaporeans came out and they're all with lights, families and and neighbors, and there are lots of lights. It was the most romantic thing I've ever seen. And aww. I remember thinking, oh, I wish I had one of them so that I can also, you know, hold onto like a lantern, and it's beautiful. And I thought if I was Hindu and I convert to Christianity, it would be very difficult to give up.
Sure. This whole question really ties into your research, doesn't it, Christy? This question of Christian conformity to the world, what it means to be in the world but not of it. Do you have any reflections on that from the historical perspective?
Because I study religious conformity, but more in the Puritan context. I think we do talk about a spectrum. Even Puritans back then, they are aware that there is a spectrum when it comes to conformity to a culture or a community that they are not completely consciously part of. Mm-hmm. Whereas they are consciously, they are not really part of it. And other than complete avoidance, the kind of simple idea of avoiding parts of it that seem to be outright religious and accepting other parts that seem to be just purely cultural, I think they also are aware of the fact that there's this third way when people kind of Christianize what seem to be pagan or secular. And we will have another episode on Easter celebration, and we'll talk about how Easter, there used to be a lot of debate among Puritans, among Christians throughout the ages, whether it is something to celebrate if it has pagan origins. And I think as Joe and Lorraine, as you guys have discussed, it is a matter of conscience, and Puritans were very much aware of conscience as plays a huge role when it comes to matters of either political conformity, religious conformity. And there's this simple differentiation between adiaphora, which is things indifferent, things that are not fundamental to our faith, mm-hmm. and things that do matter. And obviously the principle is very simple. If it is things indifferent, then you have the liberty to choose what you want to do. But the problem very often comes in when different groups of Christians think they draw lines at different places. Like, for example, when it comes to celebrating the Lord's Supper, it is very much a Puritan issue. Is it things indifferent when it comes to kneeling or sitting or standing?
Right.
You know, the posture when it comes to receiving the communion. Well, is it actually fundamental? And for some Puritans, they would think, if you force me to kneel before the sacrament, it is just an act of idolatry.
Right.
Because it's almost like a Catholic implication that we are acknowledging, as if the elements actually are the body and blood of Christ. And that's why you're forcing me to kneel, and I'm not going to do that.
So that's no longer adiaphora.
Exactly. Whereas there are other Puritans who will say, well, that's not what it's suggesting. If it is just an act of piety, an act of respect, we can safely do that. And that's what the government dictated, so we will do it. So there's also like a wide range of Puritan responses. I think very similarly today when it comes to Lunar New Year or Diwali, maybe less with Diwali actually, I think there's more of a consensus that Christians avoid it. Again, in different cultures, people respond differently.
Sure.
But certainly Lunar New Year is one of those examples when Christians interact in diverse ways.
Absolutely. And so just to summarize those three ways that you mentioned, just to make sure I have them, one is to resist it or avoid it entirely. A second one is to modify it. So doing away with the religious or superstitious elements.
Yeah, like ancestor worship.
And just celebrating the cultural side. And then the third way was to not completely do away with those religious elements, but to actually look at how we might kind of Christianize them or see parallels with biblical stories or biblical ways of celebrating life and light and all of that. Is that right? That's kind of the third way?
In terms of kind of Christianizing what seemed to be not Christian, it's more like a phenomenon that we can observe. So I think a lot of Chinese pastors today, Chinese is in, like, they can be in Singapore, they can be in Taiwan, they can be in China, Hong Kong. What we have seen is that very often we are told this story that Lunar New Year, the legend that is associated with Lunar New Year is very similar to the Passover.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, the legend goes that there's this beast that we have briefly mentioned before that's called Nian. And Nian, this beast will come out on New Year's Day to attack people and they will eat people. And to not be attacked by Nian, by this monster, then you have to be aware of what it's scared of. and scared of the color red.
Oh.
So people stick red papers on door frames, on the top of the door frame and on the sides, and scared of loud noise. So you have firecrackers. People set up firecrackers so that it's loud, and then the bees, obviously, as well as the children, will run away.
Right.
And I think these are the two main things. And very often you hear Christian leaders and pastors saying, oh, you know, this is just like the Passover, because, you know, during the Passover, according to the Exodus, they put the blood of the lamb on door frames so that the angel that God sent to Egypt will avoid the house of Israelites, and, you know, hence the idea of Passover.
Right.
It's almost like, you know, visually it's very similar. So that kind of similarity, I think during Lunar New Year, once in a while you hear sermons like that. And I think that is a way the church encourages Chinese Christians to see the parallel and remember the gospel. Maybe not so much about saying that, you know, Lunar New Year has Christian origins.
Sure.
But more of a reminder that this is what God has done to his people. He's our Redeemer, and we should give thanks to God for that and remember Jesus and what he's done.
That's really good.
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting parallel here of, obviously, we have cultural celebrations, but also movies and films often follow storylines which are very similar to have echoes of the gospel.
Absolutely.
And I remember hearing a different podcast about how we can use films with children to help them engage with films in a really helpful way of asking the question, what were you reminded of in this film? What parts of this film reminded you of the gospel? Or kind of asking them, kind of, what did you see of the characters, of their character, of what they did? And it helps us, yeah, as Chrissy said, remind ourselves of parts of the gospel stories, which then remind us of Jesus. And so there's a way of engaging with culture that encourages us in our Christian walks, which I think is a real kind of redemption of things which, in a way, aren't kind of based in God, aren't founded
right
in him.
Hmm. That's great.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think a lot of distinctive features of Lunar New Year that Christians can focus on when it comes to celebrating this festival with their non-Christian relatives and friends, like things like renewal that people cared about, embracing the new year, people cared about fresh starts. It's a very hopeful moment. And we as Christians are a hopeful people. And I think the other thing that I find kind of funny is that Lunar New Year is a time when people talk about money a lot. Right? People talk about, you know, like 恭喜发财, when people greet each other, you'll become, you know, I hope you get rich.
Means like, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's also the moment in time when people can find, it's a moment of insecurity.
Ah.
There are a lot of literature and songs and TV shows about how when you go home, you are just so stressed because of all the comparisons. You have a relative who's a lot richer than you. You have a younger sibling who goes to a better school. It's a time when family come together, yes, but it's also a time when a lot of comparisons happen, and it's very hurtful to people. And we as Christians can be witness when we want to show people that we love in a different way. We don't love you because you are better than other people, because you make more money, because you are better. We don't give our praises based on this secular standards. And we can really be salt and light in our wider family when we act differently at a time like this.
Yeah. And I wonder, kind of with those cultural celebrations, with things which wouldn't on the surface be Christian or even on the inside, I wonder if we can use those situations and celebrations to speak the hope of Jesus into those situations and can challenge people to really think, is that really going to bring you hope, or is that really going to bring you prosperity this year? A lot of people probably don't see that they are trying to find contentment, they're trying to find satisfaction in things which won't ever satisfy or bring contentment. And I guess we have the kind of solution to their biggest problem in Jesus. So yeah, I wonder if you can think of situations where you can speak Jesus into these cultural celebrations. Maybe this Lunar New Year, but maybe if you're talking about hope, talk about the hope of Jesus that is really secure in his death and resurrection and ascension. Or what about the generosity that we share at Lunar New Year? Maybe we can talk about the generosity of the God who gave his only son for us. Well, we do wish you a happy Lunar New Year, and we'll be praying for you guys that this time can be a time where you can reflect on the hope of Jesus and how that can speaks into all of our lives, and how he is ultimately the one who gives us these good gifts to enjoy for his sake. So yeah, have a happy New Year, and we wish you all the best.